Welcome, everybody, to the Cohen Esri Invest Apartment Investors Podcast. My name is Ryan Huffman. I am Cohen Esri's Chief Operating Officer. And today we have as our guests Lee Harris, our President and CEO, and Karen Crouch, our Director of Customer Fulfillment. So today's topic is going to center around customer fulfillment and how it might affect investor returns. So let's kick this off with Karen. Welcome to the podcast. Let's start out with you telling our audience about yourself and how you came to Cohen Esri.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. As Ryan mentioned, my name is Karen Crouch. I am our Director of Customer Fulfillment. I have a couple different hats that I wear here at Cohen Esri. Some of those include our Director of Deployments. I am the Director of all field-facing training. I am the Director of our Property Management Software. I manage our corporate building. And what we're here to talk about today, I'm our Director of Customer Fulfillment, which we'll get into in a lot of detail. So about me, I come from restaurant management. I am a native in that area. I have an amazing husband, a fantastic seven-year-old. We are outdoors people. We're lake lovers. We're sports lovers. We love music and just count my blessings every single day. So how I came to Cohen Esri is actually one of my favorite stories. I actually started in the restaurant business when I was 15. I became a supervisor when I was 16. I fell in love with the industry, just loved how teams could come together, how humans could work together to kind of accomplish the odds that can be very, very challenging. I went to Kansas State University and pursued a degree in hotel and restaurant management and ended up managing a restaurant for about 7.5 years that was just down from Cohen Esri's headquarters. So during this time, I got to know Lee, I got to know Jeanette, I met Ryan, and many of the other Cohen Esri team members. And my circumstances were kind of changing. I had a young child, and restaurant management hours can be challenging around that. And I was kind of at a point in my career where I just wanted to see what else I could do. So I was pursuing other avenues and was actually interviewing with a restaurant distribution company when Lee came in one day and we started chatting, and there was just something that said, hey, throw it out there. And so I said to Lee, hey, if you're looking for good people, I'm on the market. And he said, send me your resume. I think I had it to him in about 15 minutes. I retracted my interest in the company I was interviewing with. And 4.5 years later, here we are.
And Ryan, let me tag on to that, because that is exactly what happened. But she doesn't tell all the story and all the nuance. So we had been eating at this restaurant. We, being members of our Cohen Esri team, had been eating at this restaurant for years, literally. Karen would come and take care of us and serve us. And what I never knew until much later, the time we were going to eat there, she was managing the restaurant, but she never beat her chest or it was a big deal about the fact she was the manager. And the level of service was incredible. The way I looked at it now, we were interviewing her every time we went to that restaurant, and she passed the interview, I don't know how many hundred times, probably at least. And so it was a no-brainer. And when we knew we needed somebody to come run the customer fulfillment side of our operation, she's the first and only person that came to mind. So Karen, you probably didn't know you were being interviewed every time I sat down at that table.
I did not, but I'm glad I passed.
He does now. How about that? And you know, Lee, that's a great segue into kind of introducing this topic. And I want to start that out by talking a little bit about the difference between customer satisfaction and customer fulfillment. And for me, I've always boiled this down to one word, and that's anticipation. And what I mean by that is, if you think about a time when you were satisfied as a customer, all of your needs were met. When you think about a time when you felt fulfilled as a customer, somebody went above and beyond and gave you something that maybe either you didn't know you needed or they anticipated the need. And so I'm curious, Lee and Karen, how you react to that definition. Is that how you view it, or do you view it even slightly differently?
Yeah, I'll jump on that first. And I like to use this analogy. So let's say that there's a resident who has a leaky faucet in her kitchen, and she calls the office and says, I have a leaky faucet. Maintenance guy shows up in a reasonable period of time, fixes the faucet, makes sure he doesn't use her nice kitchen towels to wipe his grimy hands, and may leave a note saying, I fixed it, and that's that. So the resident at that point is satisfied because her request was met. Now, fulfillment takes us to a whole higher level. In the same scenario, the maintenance technician goes in and not only fixes the kitchen faucet, but has a checklist of the top seven things for that property that seem to go wrong in people's apartments. Perhaps he inspects the closet doors in the bedroom because they're notorious for coming off the tracks. He checks the thermostat and makes sure it's properly calibrated. And there may be three or four other things that are often a problem, and those items are checked and where required, repaired. Then there's a follow-up with that resident to say, not only did we take care of that kitchen faucet, but we checked these other seven things and found three more things that needed to be taken care of, and we did that too. Now that resident, that customer says, wow, I didn't even know about one of those, and I've been ignoring the other two, and these folks came in and took care of all of it, and I didn't even have to ask them. That's fulfillment, Ryan. And Karen, you can add to that because you're deep in the weeds here, but that's kind of the basis of where we came up with this whole notion of customer fulfillment and the fact that it's one of our five core values.
Absolutely. So I think it's been very interesting, the term satisfaction and kind of its evolution over the last, I don't know, 5-10 years, because that's ultimately what we all strive for back in the day, is let's have really satisfying customers. But now with, you know, the saturation of so many markets, just having satisfied customers is going to put you out of business, right? So kind of how that word has evolved, you know, and it really does play on that. To me, satisfaction is, hey, we did the fundamentals, we did the ordinary, it's fine, I'm not mad, but I'm not really happy. And to me, fulfillment is really putting yourself in your customer's shoes, obviously in our case, in our resident's shoes, and focusing on things like comfort, convenience, connection, and that overall quality of life. So looking at those fundamentals and seeing what layers we can add to really set ourselves apart from our competition and leave our customers just this wow feeling. When I try to put that into practical terms to kind of play on your analogy, when I talk to property teams, I use the move-in for an example. We know that's such a critical moment to nurture our current sale and then to build that future sale. So at that move-in, you know, a satisfactory move-in would be, hey, we've got a really clean unit, everything works right, we walked it, we thank them for being part of the property, you know, part of the community, and we gave them keys. Where a fulfilling, you know, move-in experience is, we're going to do all those things. We're going to walk them through how to use the portal, how to log maintenance, how to connect with the property team. We're going to give them this resident orientation packet where we literally took the lease, put it into layman's terms on the key points. We're going to talk about communicating, getting in touch with the property team. We're going to sprinkle in the fun stuff like the restaurants in the community, you know, where to do your shopping, where the post office is, all those things. So we're even taking a non-resident friendly document like a lease and making it resident friendly and easy to digest and easy to consume. We're following up after 24 hours. We're following up after a week and ensuring that their home is everything that they want it to be. And that's the difference between satisfaction and fulfillment in my term.
And those are both great examples. And Karen, you kind of started down this path, so let's go there a little bit. When you first got here, you actually created the customer fulfillment program because we didn't have this position or this program when you were brought on. So talk about how you went about creating the program in the beginning and really what we learned maybe in that first 6 to 12 months as you were creating the program.
So when we started, we definitely had the what. We knew that we wanted to increase our customer fulfillment, which would increase our NPS, which would increase retention, which would increase our financial performance. So, you know, I was really tasked with the how. How are we going to get there? So I was very blessed to have a good amount of what I call discovery time in the beginning. And those first several weeks, if not month, I just inundated myself with what Cohen Esri had to offer, like how our properties were performing, what our metrics were telling us, areas where we were, you know, excelling at, areas where we had opportunities, and kind of what systems we had in place to support those. I went out on property, I met our property managers, I met our maintenance technicians, I walked units, I walked properties. So I really just inundated myself with, you know, what Cohen Esri was doing and how we were supporting those initiatives. From there, I took it, you know, global, and I started really getting to National Apartment Association, IREM, looking at what our competitors were doing, what resources were out there, and kind of marrying these external research with what we had to really figure out what was step one of this. And kind of what flushed out of that was we knew we needed a foundation. We knew that it was going to be really hard to achieve fulfillment if we didn't at least have a benchmark of how everything should be done. So that was really the first step, and it was really big in terms of what needed to be created and how we were going to go about creating it.
And I think one of the things you didn't talk about, but I'll throw in here, because you and I had so many conversations about this, the foundation is great. What you also found out was that really fulfillment permeates through every part of the organization and what I'm going to call the resident interaction. And that was kind of the aha moment, I think, for you, correct, in how you started creating this program.
Definitely. Going through these operations, going through these processes, how we process rent, that affects our customers. How we do curb appeal, that affects our customers. How we do every single piece of operations, I mean, 99% of the time, it's going to touch our customers. So that's where I kind of took everything under the umbrella of, let's just go ahead and address the whole kit and caboodle all at once and standardize these things to get the foundation to be able to move it up to the fulfillment level. So definitely.
So Ryan, I'm going to interject here. You just attended the National Multi-Housing Council annual conference in San Diego, I believe. And you told me something that was kind of shocking this morning about the state of customer service since COVID. You want to share that with the audience? And then I've got a follow-up to that.
Yeah, I'll clear that. And Karen, interestingly, Karen and I talked about this at lunch as well when we had lunch last week. So thinking about COVID and the state of the labor market, which, you know, going global, the labor market is constricted all over the place. One of the things that came up at the National Multi-Housing Council and in Karen and I's lunch is how customer service, let's start with customer service and customer satisfaction, in many areas has kind of flown out the window. And you think about anything from when you go out to eat at a restaurant and how you're interacting with servers to how things are happening in the grocery store to the retail environment. So it permeates out and folks have gone away from this idea of customer service. My opinion is because I think it doesn't matter. It does matter a lot. And Karen, I'll let you share. You even said you don't go out to eat anymore because you're having those kinds of experiences. So you're seeing this idea that since COVID and since remote work, and then we've got this constriction that customer service isn't first and foremost and front and center in a lot of organizations and a lot of services that we all consume. I told Karen last week, until we as society say customer service and customer fulfillment is essential, we're kind of sort of in this weird situation right now where it's not front and center. And Karen, you might share your thoughts on our lunch too, but we talked about this a lot.
Yeah, there's definitely a polarization to me of the demands of the customer and society's ability to meet those demands. Demands have increased, customer service has decreased. So it's just continuing to polarize this further and further. Yeah, I don't go out to eat anymore. I love going out to eat, but I don't do it because it's frustrating to watch these servers just not care and management not care. And you go to the grocery store and you've got entire shelves cleaned out. And I mean, that could be a supply issue, but there's just a lack of consumers' needs. And as challenging as that might be, it's also an opportunity to really separate ourselves if we can get a grasp on this and really and capitalize on it and say, hey, nobody else is doing this, but we are. We're not letting the environmental issues of COVID drag us down, but there is a much more relaxed and lax, I guess is the better word, focus on, you know, who's paying the bills. And obviously that's the customer.
So Karen, this has been a focus of ours even long before COVID. I mean, as I said earlier, customer fulfillment is one of our five core values. And to know that we are delivering on that core value created the Net Promoter Score. I didn't create it. We adopted it. It's an internationally favored metric for measuring customer satisfaction. And it's been a real, I think, a real differentiator for us because we are in the positive territory with that. But it's also a real struggle. I mean, we struggle just like many companies with respect to team member turnover. And then when new team members come in, they're screened for their beliefs about customer fulfillment and customer service, but then they have to learn the Colin Esri way. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about how in the world do we impart that Colin Esri way to existing and to new team members so we get everybody on the same page and we get these positive net promoter scores, which we adopted long before the rest of the industry. I think we launched that 2018. So this is year six, going on year seven of using the NPS. But how do we make this happen with the turnover that's rampant in today's society where jobs are concerned?
When you take good care of your customers are, you know, they're in turn going to be a lot more relaxed and lenient with you. When you focus on all of their needs, then life is just easier. When we're kind of burying our head in the sand and we're avoiding things, and then our resident profile gets really grumpy, and then we're just constantly in the weeds on chasing after this issue or that issue, it makes operations just that much harder. So if we can adopt from the get-go, from day one of employment, focus on this, and the rest is going to be a lot easier, where if you're going to fight this, then the rest is going to be a lot harder. So really getting our teams to understand this is the priority that you should focus on, and the rest just kind of falls into place. I think that that is the message that we really need to deliver and the message that we really have to get in front of. And we all know once you kind of get down in a hole, it's hard to get out. So if you stay out of that hole, you just have just an easier go at everything in terms of operations.
So how are we training our team members relative to the Colin Esri way?
So one of the things that I do is I meet with half of the portfolio every single quarter. So I'll kind of touch on that. I get in front of them and I give them the processes, and we talk about the Colin Esri way, and we show them how they can achieve the success. And we talk about soft skills, and we talk about conflict management, communication, emotional intelligence, all of these things that are going to help build in these areas. Then we do follow-ups with them continually and say, you know, congratulate them on a job well done. If they haven't, they're having some struggles, we give them a path on, hey, if we did these three things, if you interjected this into your daily operations, you can elevate this in a quick turnaround time. Some of the other things, we have quick connects where they can jump on, ask any questions. Field first is, you know, our motto. I live by that motto. So I'm trying to get in front of our new team members as quickly as possible and really kind of preaching my gospel of, you take care of your customer, the rest is going to be, you know, a lot easier. But just multiple touch points within multiple people of our organization, and then me specifically really pushing the customer fulfillment piece.
And that's good to kind of segue in. So talk a little bit, Karen, about the customer fulfillment team that you built. What specifically do they do, and how do they impact operations?
So I have two on my team. One of them is focused on handling what I would call kind of the overflow calls to corporate. So for whatever reason, a resident wants to talk to somebody at corporate. This person she's fantastic about, you know, listening to the concern, really getting to the root cause, and then working either individually with that resident or working together with that resident and the team member to find a mutually beneficial resolution for Colin Esri and the resident. So a lot of it is working with team members to build the bridge between the communication gap or whatever it might be, and really getting that resident back to an area where they want to talk to the property team and get that resolution, and then a little bit of coaching along the way. As I mentioned, I do the coaching with our property teams. Another one of my team members joins those as well from time to time, really focusing on how we can get our teams to the next level. Do a lot of auditing of what we have in our operational system in terms of support, in terms of having the freshest, newest ideas, but a lot of team member support to help them deliver these excellent customer experiences and kind of have that oversight of the importance of it. So they're a fantastic team. They love the residents. They love the team. And it's been just wonderful to have them.
Yeah, I definitely think they're awesome. And that leads to a segue, Lee, for you. Focus a little bit on the investor returns. How do you think customer fulfillment really impacts heavily those investor returns?
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. If people are feeling good about their experience in one of our communities, they typically will stay, they typically will pay. And when we reduce turnover on a property, turnover being resident turnover, we save a lot of money. And the other side of that is when it's time for that rent increase, if somebody's feeling fulfilled, they are much more willing to accept that rent increase and realize there's value that's been provided. I think that's really what this is all about, is creating value for the resident and making sure that they are experiencing that. And that's why something is so simple as how do we deliver a rent increase? We've always advocated, go knock on the door at least 60 days in advance. That may mean that one of our team members has to go out at 6:30 in the evening to catch a resident at home, but sit in their living room, make sure they understand what the benefits have been of living in their apartment for the last year, and making certain that they felt that level of fulfillment that we desired to provide, and get them to sign that lease. That's been working pretty well. We're seeing rent increases that are substantially higher than what we had programmed. We've seen turnover reduced on some properties. We still have a long way to go. This is always a work in progress. And it's also interesting from a generational standpoint. Baby boomers tend to be a bit less transient, let me put it that way. Millennials, sometimes they're buying homes, but a lot of times they're staying put because they like the lifestyle. And then you do have the transients from Generation Z, the youngest generation that's of age to rent apartments because they move around for jobs. They may take on roommates. There's a lot more financial stress for Gen Zers, Zoomers, as we call them. But I do believe that the key fundamental here is if we treat the customer the right way, they're going to stick around. They're going to pay more rent. They'll pay on time. And we reduce that cost of the turnover, which is painting and cleaning and maybe some serious flooring repair or replacement, not to mention the loss of rent.
You know, you said something earlier that I think I'd like to hear both of your thoughts on, and I'm going to say it this way. Fulfillment likely has a different definition depending on which age group you're in. And the example I'll use that you used is the boomers tend to be a lot more in person and telephone call oriented, where millennials and Gen Z, they like the high tech world. They like their apartments to be high tech. They like the Wi-Fi. They like any type of instant communication. Are you guys finding that fulfillment may change the program because it's different depending on the audience?
I'll touch on that as a millennial. Don't get me wrong. I love setting up automated bills and taking that part of hassle out of my day, right? But I also like those human connections. I think that's another huge consideration for fulfillment is we went from having multiple touch points in a month with a specific resident, from rent drops to calling in about maintenance, to now we might have two or three touch points in a year. So that makes those touch points that much more critical because there are so fewer of them. So we really got to hit it out of the park every single time because it's not a saturated kind of transaction anymore. So the millennials, the Zoomers, yes. Do we want the convenient, easy parts of life where we don't have to walk into the leasing office to give them our rent check? Absolutely. But when we do want to talk to a human, we want to be able to get a hold of them. We want to have that good interaction. And if it goes south, that's going to shut it down right then and there because that might be our only interaction for that entire year. So I think that really emphasizes how critical these are just because there are less of them than there used to be.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that we need to respect what the generational differences are in terms of communication. But trying to raise somebody's rent, maybe $100 or $130 or whatever it's going to be, I certainly would want to have as much human interaction with that resident as I possibly could, to answer questions, to overcome objections, to make sure that the benefits have been properly sold and that they're not any sort of misconceptions. You can always have a millennial or a Zoomer tell you, no, don't come by. I'm not saying that we should just show up at the door at 6:30 in the evening, but I would, as a property manager, I would be reaching out saying, want to come by and chat about your experience at our community and what we're looking at for the next year where the rent is concerned, and I'd like to make an appointment to do so. And again, Karen, you've got more experience than I, but in the old days, people really liked to have that for all generations. And I don't know what our experience is right now, but I would like to think that we still have some Zoomers and some millennials that do welcome that kind of interaction.
Absolutely. And I think that's a good point. Our teams have to be versatile enough to be able to accommodate the different needs of our customers. And that's no different from 20 years ago, 50 years ago. Our customers change as the world changes. We all change as the world changes. So really having those team members that can be adaptable to each of those different segments and offer and support what's needed is critical. And it will always be critical. And it has always been critical. So being versatile in that arena is key.
And I think all those are great thoughts as we wrap this up. I think what you've heard today and what our message is, customer fulfillment should be really the center point of your investment, the center point of your operational platform, and it can do wonders for investor returns. Do you guys have anything else to add, or have I hit the nail on the head?
You did. You hit the nail for sure.
I think that's great. The only thing that I was going to add in terms of investor returns is when we don't just turn and burn units, there is a whole nother impact on that that is very vital to our teams right now. And that is, let's say we have a property that's 300 units. We average 65% retention. We implement this fantastic fulfillment program. And guess what? We just increased our retention to 75%. So that means on a 300 unit property, we've just saved turning 30 units. We average for market rates that 16 hours is spent by our maintenance technicians per unit. So if you just take that time away from just turning and burning, and inject that into preserving the asset, increasing the appearance of the asset, and really focusing on big picture asset preservation, then that money is so much better spent doing that as opposed to just turning and burning units. And I think that's a huge consideration is, when we can get ourselves out of the weeds in terms of just flipping, and really get into the big picture piece of it, then that's huge. And I think that in this climate of having challenges getting team members on board and vacancies, within teams, when you get a team out of just hair on fire, turn and burn, you get out of burning and turning the team member, right? So then you have people that last longer, they specialize in the property longer, and we don't have those vacancies. So even from just managing your operations, that in turn is going to just really increase our returns on what that property looks like and the condition of it when it comes time to sell. So I think that that's a huge piece of investor returns as well, is minimizing the daily fires and getting to more big picture asset preservation to build those great returns. So that was just the only piece I wanted to interject because I'm very passionate about that part.
And Karen, I want to say, we're so glad that we were able to save you from the restaurant industry and bring you over to our side of the street. So thank you.
So happy to be here.
Karen, thanks so much for being part of the Cup Podcast. And everybody, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.